Otherwise, he would have rejected it. He would then still be with Jaina and Uther, and his father would... If he's so all-knowing, then how can the Dreadlords control him like they do? They are agents of the one who created our master, the fiery lords of the Burning Legion. The words sent a shiver through Arthas. Burning Legion. Two words only, but the power they promised was heady somehow. In his lap, Frostmourne flickered. It is a vast demonic army that has consumed countless worlds beyond our own. Kel'Thuzad's voice was almost hypnotic, and Arthas shut his eyes for a moment. Behind the closed lids, scenes played out in his mind as the Lich spoke. He saw a red sky arcing over a red world. Over a ridge poured a wave of creatures. They ran like hounds, but no natural beasts were they. They had fearsome jaws crammed with teeth, and strange tentacles sprouting from their shoulders. Stones crashed to the earth, leaving trails of green fire to come to life as animated rock that marched on their foes. Now it comes to set this world to the flame. Our master was created to pave the way for its arrival. The Dreadlords were sent to make sure he succeeded. The scene in Arthas's mind shifted. He was looking at an ornate carved gateway. He knew it to be the dark portal, although he had never seen it with his own eyes. It radiated green fire, and a host of demons were clustered around it. Arthas shook his head, and the vision evaporated. So, the plague in Lordaeron, the citadels in Northrend, the slaughtering of the elves, it was all just to prepare for some huge demonic invasion? Yes. In time, you will find that our entire history has been shaped by the coming conflict. Arthas pondered this. Frostmourne was definitely awakening, and he removed the gauntlet from his right hand to caress it. Cold, bone cold it was. So cold that even his Death Knight's hand, which had been tempered for such a task, ached as he touched it. He felt the whispers again and smiled. There is more, Lich, is there not? He asked, turning to regard Kel'Thuzad. You have said that the Dreadlords imprison our master. Tell me now. Not possessing flesh any longer, Kel'Thuzad had no facial expressions with which to betray his emotions. But Arthas knew by the slight hunching of the undead's form that he was uncomfortable. Nonetheless, he spoke. The first phase of the Lich King's plan was to engineer the scourge, which would eradicate any group that might resist the Legion's arrival. Arthas nodded, like the forces of Lordaeron and the High Elves. He felt a vague knot in the pit of his stomach, but dismissed it. Exactly. The second phase is to actually summon the demon lord who will spark the invasion. The Lich lifted a bony finger and pointed in the direction in which they traveled. There is a nearby encampment of orcs who maintain a functional demon gate. I must use the gate to commune with the demon lord and receive his instructions. Arthas sat quietly atop Invincible for a moment. His mind went back to when he had fought orcs alongside Uther the Lightbringer at Strahd. He recalled the orcs had performed human sacrifices to their demon lords. He and Uther had both been disgusted and appalled. Arthas himself had been so infuriated that Uther had had to lecture him on not fighting with rage in his heart. If we allow our passions to turn to bloodlust, then we will become as vile as the orcs, Uther had chided. Well, Uther was dead, and while Arthas was still killing orcs, he was now working with demons. A muscle twitched near his eye. What are we waiting for? He snapped, and urged Invincible into a gallop. The orcs fought bravely, but in the end It was futile, as all attempts to halt the scourge would be futile. Arthas galloped forward, invincible, leaping nimbly over fallen orc bodies. He regarded the gate for a long moment. 3 stone slabs, strangely elegant for so brutal a race. Erected nearby, though, were huge animal bones that glowed a dull red hue. In the confines outlined by the slabs of stone, green energy swirled sluggishly. A passage to another world. Jaina would be intrigued, but too horrified to pursue her curiosity. That was what made her weak. It was what made her Jaina. "The brutes have been slain," Arthas spat. "The demon gate is yours, lich." The skeletal form shivered with delight, floating forward and lifting his arms imploringly. Steps led up to the archway. Arthas noticed that the lich did not ascend any of them. He stood at the bottom, out of respect, or out of a more pragmatic desire to avoid harm. Arthas hung back, watching intently from atop Invincible. "I call upon thee, Archimonde. Your humble servant seeks an audience." The green mist continued to swirl. Then Arthas realized he could make out a shape. Features that were both like and unlike the dreadlords he was more familiar with. The being had what Arthas guessed to be blue-gray skin, though with the green light tinging him, it was difficult to be certain. There was no question, however, that the demon's body was powerful, with a mighty barrel chest, large strong arms, and a lower body that seemed to be shaped like that of a goat. Archimonde's legs curved back, ending in a pair of cloven hooves instead of feet. A tail twitched, perhaps belying Archimonde's calm, in-control demeanor. Arms, shoulders, and legs were encased in golden, gleaming armor adorned with shapes of skulls and spikes. 2 tentacles, long and thin, dangled from his chin. But the most arresting feature of his elongated face were his eyes, which glowed a sickly green color that was brighter and more compelling than the green mist that whirled about him. Even though Archimonde was not yet here, not yet physically in this world, Arthas was not unmoved by the demon's presence. "You called my name, puny lich, and I have come," said the demon, his voice resonant and seeming to vibrate along Arthas's very bones. "You are Kel'Thuzad, are you not?" Kel'Thuzad bowed his horned head. He was all but groveling, Arthas noted. "Yes, great one. I am the summoner. I beg of you, tell me how I may expedite your passage into this world. I exist only to serve." "There is a special tome you must find," the demon lord intoned. His gaze flickered to Arthas, examined him for a moment, then dismissed him. Arthas found himself growing annoyed. "The only remaining spellbook of Medivh, the last guardian. Only his lost incantations are powerful enough to bring me into your world. Seek out the mortal city of Dalaran. It is there that the tome is kept. At twilight, 3 days from now, you will begin the summoning." The image disappeared. Arthas stared at where it had been for a long moment. Dalaran, the greatest concentration of magic, other than Quel'Thalas, in Azeroth. Dalaran, where Jaina Proudmoore had trained, where Jaina still would probably be. A flicker of pain blinked through him for an instant. "Dalaran is defended by the most powerful magi in Azeroth," he said slowly to Kel'Thuzad. "There is no way to hide our approach. They will be prepared for us."
"As Quel'Thalas was," Kel'Thuzad laughed, a hollow sound. "Think how easily this army crushed them. They will do the same there. Besides, remember, I was a member of the Kirin Tor and close to Archmage Antonidas. Dalaran was my home when I was nothing more than mortal flesh. I know its secrets, its protective spells, ways to slip inside they never thought to properly guard. It is sweet to be able to visit terror upon those who would have seen me abandon my path and my destiny. Do not fear, Death Knight. We cannot fail. No one, no thing, can stop the scourge.
Out of the corner of his eye, Arthas caught movement. He turned and beheld the floating spirit that had once been Sylvanas Windrunner. She had obviously been listening to the entire conversation and seen his reaction to his new orders.
"This talk of Dalaran moves you," she said archly.
"Silence, ghost," he muttered, despite himself remembering the first time he had entered the gates of Dalaran as escort to Jaina. The innocence of that time was almost impossible for him to conceive of anymore.
"Someone there you care for, perhaps? Pleasant memories?"
The damned banshee would not let up. He surrendered to his anger, lifted a hand, and she writhed in pain for a moment before he released her. "You will say no more of this," he warned. "Let us be about our task." Sylvanas was silent, but on her pale, ghostly face was a savage smirk of satisfaction.
"I can help." Jaina's voice was calm, calmer than she actually expected it to sound. She stood with her master, Antonidas, in his familiar, loved, wonderfully disorganized study, gazing at him intently.
"I've learned so much."
The archmage stood gazing out the window, his hands clasped loosely behind his back, as if he were doing nothing more serious than looking down at students at practice.
"No," he said quietly. "You have other duties."
He turned to regard her then, and her heart sank at the expression on his face.
"Duties I, and Tyrannus, light rest his soul, both shooked. Because of his refusal to listen to that strange prophet, he ended up murdered by his son. And his kingdom lies in ruins, inhabited only by the dead."
Even now, Jaina cringed at the statement. Arthas. It was still so hard to believe. She had loved him so much, loved him still. Her constant prayer, silent and known only to her, was that he was under some sort of influence he could not resist, because if he had done all of this of his own will.
"I too was asked, and I too had the arrogance to assume I knew best. And so, my dear, here we are. We all must live, or die, with our decisions."
Antonidas smiled sadly. Her eyes stung with tears, she blinked back and refused to shed.
"Let me stay. I can keep safe those you have promised to take care of, Jaina Proudmoore," Antonidas said, a hint of sternness creeping into his voice and mien. "One more or less here will make no difference. Others look to you now."
"Antonidas..." Her voice broke on the word. She rushed toward him, flinging her arms around him. She had never dared embrace him before. He had always intimidated her far too much. But now he looked old. Old and frail. And worst of all, resigned.
"Child," he said affectionately, patting her back, then chuckled.
"No, you are a child no longer. You are a woman and a leader. Still, you had best go."
From outside, a voice rang out, strong and clear and familiar. Jaina felt as though she had been struck. She gasped in sickened recognition, pulling back from her mentor's embrace.
"Wizards of the Kirin Tor, I am Arthas, first of the Lich King's Death Knights. I demand that you open your gates and surrender to the might of the Scourge.
Death Knight. Jaina turned her shocked gaze to Antonidas, who gave her a sad smile.
I would have spared you the knowing, at least for now.
She reeled with the knowledge. Arthas, here. The archmage strode to the balcony. A slight flutter of age-gnarled hands, and his own voice was as magnified as Arthas's had been.
Greetings, Prince Arthas, Antonidas called down. How fares your noble father?
Lord Antonidas, Arthas replied.
Where was he? Right outside? Would she see him if she stepped beside Antonidas on the balcony?
There's no need to be snide.
Jaina turned her head away and wiped at her eyes. She struggled to speak, but the words seemed to stick in her throat.
We've prepared for your coming, Arthas, Antonidas continued calmly. My brethren and I have erected auras that will destroy any undead that pass through them. Your petty magics will not stop me, Antonidas. Perhaps you've heard what happened in Quel'Thalas. They thought themselves invulnerable as well.
Quel'Thalas. Jaina thought she might be sick. She had been here in Dalaran when word had come, from a handful of survivors who had managed to escape, about what had happened to Quel'Thalas. So too had been the Quel'Dorei prince. She had never seen Kael'thas so angry, so shattered, so raw. She had gone to him, words of compassion and comfort on her lips, but he whirled and gazed at her with such a look of fury that she instinctively drew back.
Say nothing,
Kael had snarled, his fists clenched. She could see, to her shock, that he was barely restraining himself from physically harming her.
Foolish girl.
This is the monster you would take to your bed?
Jaina blinked, stunned at the crudeness of the words coming from one so cultured. But he was not interested in hearing anything she had to say.
Arthas is a butcher. He has slaughtered thousands of innocent people.
There is so much blood on his hands that a whole ocean could never wash them clean.
And you loved him? Chose him over me?
His voice, normally so mellifluous and controlled, cracked on the last word. Jaina felt quick tears come to her eyes as she suddenly understood. He was attacking her because he could not attack his real enemy. He felt helpless, impotent, and was striking out at the nearest target. At her, Jaina Proudmoore, whose love he had wanted and failed to win.
Oh, Kael'thas, she said softly.
He has done terrible things, she began. What your people have suffered. You know nothing of suffering, he cried. You are a child, with a child's mind and a child's heart. A heart that you would give to that. He slaughtered them, Jaina. And then he raised their corpses.
Jaina stared at him mutely, his words having no sting now that she knew the reason for them.
He murdered my father, Jaina, just as he murdered his own. I should have been there.
To die with him? With the rest of your people? What good would throwing your life away do for—
No sooner had the words left her lips than she realized that it was the wrong thing to say.
Kael'thas tensed and cut her off sharply.
I could have stopped him. I should have.
He straightened, and coldness suddenly chased away the fire in him. He bowed low, exaggeratedly.
I will be departing Dalaran as soon as possible. There is nothing for me here.
Jaina winced at the emptiness, the resignation in his voice.
I was a fool of the greatest order to ever think any of you humans could aid me. I will leave this place of doddering old magi and ambitious young ones. None of you can help. My people need me to lead now that my father—
He fell silent and swallowed hard.
I must go to them. To what pathetically few remain. To those who have endured, rebirthed by the blood of those who now serve your beloved.
He had stalked off then, fury etched in every line of his tall, elegant body, and Jaina had felt her own heart ache with his pain. And now he was here. Arthas was here, at the head of the army of the undead, a Death Knight himself. Antonidas' voice startled her out of her reverie, and she blinked, trying to return to the present moment.
"Pull your troops back, or we will be forced to unleash our full powers against you. Make your choice, Death Knight."
Antonidas stepped back from the balcony and turned to regard Jaina. "Jaina," he said in his normal voice, "we will be erecting teleportation-blocking barriers momentarily. You must go before you are trapped here.
Maybe I can reason with him. Maybe I can."
She fell silent, hearing the unrealistic wanting in her own voice. She hadn't even been able to stop him from murdering innocents in Strathholm, or going to Northrend when she was certain it was a trap. He'd not listened to her then. If Arthas was indeed under some dark influence, how could she dissuade him now? She took a deep breath and stepped back, and Antonidas nodded softly. There was so much she wanted to say to this man, her mentor, her guide, but all she could do was give him a shaky smile, now, as he fought what they both knew would likely be his last battle. She found she couldn't even say goodbye to him.
"I'll take care of our people," she said thickly, cast the teleportation spell, and disappeared.
The first part of the battle was over, and Arthas had gotten what he had come for. Arthas had obtained the requested spellbook of Medivh. It was large and curiously heavy for its size, bound in red leather with gold binding. Across its front was an exquisitely tooled black raven, its wings outspread. The book still had Antonidas's blood on it. He wondered if that would make it more potent. Invincible shifted beneath him, stamping a hoof and shaking his neck, as if he still had flesh that could be irritated by flies. They were on a hilltop overlooking Dalaran, whose towers still caught the light and gleamed in hues of gold and white and purple, while its streets ran with blood. Many of the Magi who had fought him hours before stood beside him now. Most of them were too badly damaged to be of use, other than as fodder to throw at attackers, but some could still be used, the skills they had in life harnessed to serve the Lich King in death. Kel'Thuzad was like a child on Wintervale morning. He was perusing the pages of Medivh's spellbook, thoroughly engrossed with this new toy. It irritated Arthas. "The Circle of Power has been prepared per your instructions, Lich. Are you ready to begin the summoning?"
"Nearly," the undead thing replied.
Skeletal fingers turned a page of the book. There is much to absorb. Medivh's knowledge of demons alone is staggering. I suspect that he was far more powerful than anyone ever realized. A blackish-green swirl had begun manifesting as Kel'Thuzad spoke, and Tichondrius appeared as he finished. Arthas's irritation deepened as the Dreadlord spoke with his usual arrogance.
"Not powerful enough to escape death, that is for certain. Suffice to say, the work he began, we will finish today. Let the summoning commence."
And that quickly he was gone. Kel'Thuzad floated into the circle. The space was marked out by four small obelisks. In their center, a glowing circle with arcane markings had been etched. Kel'Thuzad bore the book with him, and once he fluttered into position, the lines of the circle flared to glowing purple life. At the same moment, there was a spitting, crackling sound, and eight pillars of flame sprang up about him. Kel'Thuzad turned to gaze back at Arthas with glowing eyes. "Those who yet live within Dalaran will be able to sense the power of this spell," Kel'Thuzad warned. "I must not be interrupted, or we will fail."
"I'll keep your bones safe, Lich," Arthas assured him.
As Kel'Thuzad had promised, it had been comparatively easy to enter Dalaran,
slay those who had erected specific spells against them, and take what they had come for. Arthas had even been able to kill Archmage Antonidas, the man he had once thought so very powerful. If Jaina had been there, he felt certain that she would have confronted him, appealed to what they had once had, as she had done before. She would have had no better luck now than she had then, except he was glad he did not have to fight her. Arthas's attention suddenly snapped back to the present. The gates were opening, and Arthas's gray lips curved in a grin. Previously, the Scourge had had the element of surprise on their side. Yes, many powerful magi lived in Dalaran at all times, but there was no trained militia, nor were all the magi of the Kirin Tor in Dalaran. But they had had several hours, and they had not been idle. They had teleported in an army. Good. A solid fight was just what he needed to drive distracting thoughts of Jaina Proudmoore and the youth he had once been to the back of his mind. He lifted Frostmourne, feeling it tingle in his hand, hearing the soft voice of the Lich King caress his thoughts. "Frostmourne hungers," he told his troops, pointing the sword at the armor-clad defenders of the great mage city. "Let us sate its appetite." The Scourge army roared, Sylvanas's anguished wail rising above the cacophony, causing Arthas to grin even more. Even in death, even though she obeyed his commands, she defied him, and he relished forcing her to attack those she would have preferred to defend. Invincible gathered himself beneath his rider and surged forward at full gallop, whinnying. Some of his ghastly troops stayed behind to defend Kel'Thuzad, but most of them accompanied their leader. Arthas recognized the livery of many of those whom the Kirin Tor had teleported in to defend the city. Friends, they had once been, but that was all in the past, as irrelevant to him as yesterday's weather. It was getting easier now to feel nothing but satisfaction as Frostmourne, glowing and all but singing as it feasted upon souls, rose and fell, cutting through plate as easily as flesh. After the first wave of soldiers fell, raised to serve in the Scourge, or abandoned where they had fallen as of no use, a second one came. This one had magi with them, clad in the purple robes of Dalaran, with an embroidered symbol of the Great Eye upon them. But Arthas, too, had additional aid. The demons, it would seem, wished to protect their own. Giant stones screamed down from the sky, their tails streaks of fell green fire. The earth shook where they struck, and from the craters caused by their impact, climbed what looked like stone golems, held together and directed by the sickly green energy. Arthas glanced over his shoulder. Kel'Thuzad hovered, his arms spread, his horned head thrown back. Energy crackled and coursed from him, and a green orb began to form. Then, abruptly, the lich lowered his arms and stepped out of the circle. "Come forth, Lord Archimonde," Kel'Thuzad cried. "Enter this world, and let us bask in your power." The green orb pulsed, expanding, growing taller and glowing yet more brightly. Suddenly, a pillar of fire shot skyward, and several answering lightning bolts crackled down outside the circle. And then, where there had been nothing, a figure stood, tall, powerful, graceful in its own dark and dangerous way. Arthas returned his attention to the battlefield. A retreat sounded. Clearly the Magi, at least, had seen what was transpiring, and their troops wheeled their mounts and galloped back toward the safety, temporary though Arthas suspected it to be, of Dalaran. Even as they fled, a deep, resonant voice cut through the sound of battle. "Tremble, mortals, and despair. Doom has come to this world." Arthas held up his hand, and with that simplest of gestures, the swarm of Scourge halted and retreated as well. As he galloped back to Kel'Thuzad, eyeing the giant demon lord all the while, Tichondrius teleported in, as usual, after all the danger had passed. The dreadlord made a deep obeisance. Arthas drew rein some distance away, preferring to observe.
Lord Archimonde, all the preparations have been made.
Very well, Tichondrius, replied Archimonde, giving the lesser demon a dismissive nod. Since the Lich King is of no further use to me, you dreadlords will now command the scourge. Arthas was suddenly very grateful for all those hours spent in disciplined meditation. It was only that that kept his shock and fury from showing. Even so, Invincible felt the change in him and pranced nervously. He yanked on the reins, and the undead beast stilled. The Lich King was of no further use? Why? Who exactly was he, and what had happened to him? What would happen to Arthas?
Soon I will order the invasion to begin. But first, I will make an example of these paltry wizards by crushing their city into the ashes of history.
He strode off, his body erect and proud and commanding, his hooves landing firmly with each step, his armor gleaming in the rose and gold and lavender of the encroaching twilight. Beside him, still making obeisance, strode Tichondrius. Arthas waited until they were some distance away before he finally whirled on Kel'Thuzad and burst out,
"This has got to be a joke! What happens to us now?"
"Be patient, young Death Knight. The Lich King foresaw this as well. You may yet have a part to play in his grand design."
"May."
Arthas whirled on the necromancer, his nostrils flaring, but he tamped back his anger. If anyone, either of the demons or the Lich King himself, thought for one moment that Arthas was a tool to simply be used and then discarded, he would soon show them the error of their thinking. He had done too much, lost too much, cut out too much of himself for this to be cast aside. It couldn't all be for nothing. It would not all be for nothing. The earth rumbled. Invincible shifted uneasily, lifting his hooves as if to minimize contact with the earth. Arthas glanced up quickly at the mage city. The towers were lovely at this time of day, proud and glorious and glittering in the deepening twilight hues. But as he watched, he heard a deep cracking noise. The apex of the tallest, most beautiful tower in the city suddenly fell, slowly and inexorably, tumbling downward as if the length of the tower had been clenched by a giant unseen hand. The rest of the city fell quickly, shattering and crumbling, the sound of destruction loud and thrumming in Arthas's ears. He winced at the volume, but did not tear his eyes away. He had instigated the fall of Silvermoon, had directed his scourge against it. But this, there was a casualness about it, an ease. Silvermoon had been a hard-won prize. Archimonde appeared to be able to shatter the greatest of human cities without even being present. Arthas thought about Archimonde and Tichondrius. He scratched his chin thoughtfully. In his lap, Frostmourne glowed.
Chapter 21 Kel'Thuzad, Arthas mused, as he waited atop the verdant hill for the one he had been assured would come, was a useful lich to have around. He was utterly loyal to the Lich King, even to the point of convincingly playing the lapdog to Archimonde and Tichondrius while in their presence, if that was what was required to secretly serve. Arthas had opted for silence. He did not trust himself to lie as convincingly as Kel'Thuzad. The two demons had deemed them non-essential. They would soon see how wrong they were. Carelessly, they had left the Book of Medivh in the Lich's bony hands. In that mind, too, were spells and magic so powerful that Arthas knew he would never be able to fully grasp their scope.
The third part of the plan,
Kel'Thuzad had said once the demons were gone, as idly as if he were conversing about the weather, was the true heart of the Legion's plot. Arthas remembered what Kel'Thuzad had told him earlier. First had been the creation of the Scourge, then the summoning of Archimonde. He listened now with intense interest as Kel'Thuzad continued. The Legion is after nothing less than the taking of all magic and the devouring of all life upon this world. And to that end, they plan to consume the concentrated, powerful energies contained within the Elves' Well of Eternity. In order to accomplish this, they must destroy the single thing that contains within it the truest, purest essence of life energy on Azeroth. The Well of Eternity lies across the ocean on the continent of Kalimdor, and the thing that would thwart the Legion is called Nordrassil, the World Tree. It grants the Kaldori immortality, and they are bound to it.
Kaldori? Arthas was confused. I know of Kaldori. Are they another race of elves?
The original race, Kel'Thuzad corrected. He waved a hand dismissively. But those details are of no consequence. What matters is that we must stop the Legion from achieving this goal. And there is one among the Kaldori who would aid us. And so it was that using his magics, Kel'Thuzad had teleported Arthas to this distant continent and this hill that afforded an expansive view. The forests here were lush, healthy, but Arthas could already see what the Legion had wrought in the distance. Where the land, trees, beasts were not dead, they had been corrupted. Devour all life, indeed. A figure crested another hill below him, and Arthas smiled to himself. This was the one whose arrival he had been awaiting. They were certainly different, these night elves. This one's skin was pale lavender, etched with swirling tattoos and scars cut into the skin in ritualistic patterns. A black cloth was tied around his eyes, but he appeared to have no difficulty in navigating the terrain. He carried a weapon that resembled nothing Arthas had ever seen. Instead of a traditional sword, which would be grasped by a hilt with a blade extending from it, this weapon had two jagged blades that glowed the sick green hue of something tainted with demonic energies. So, this one had trafficked with demons before. Arthas waited a while, observing. The night elf, Illidan Stormrage, Kel'Thuzad had said his name was, raged to himself. Apparently the list of wrongs piled against him was a lengthy one, and he ached for vengeance and power as much as Kel'Thuzad had said he would. Arthas smiled.
I am free, after 10,000 years, yet still my own brother thinks I am a villain, Illidan ranted. I'll show him my true power. I'll show him the demons have no hold over me.
Are you certain of that, demon hunter? Arthas said, his voice carrying. The night elf whirled, brandishing his weapon. Are you certain your will is your own? The elf might have been blind in the traditional sense, but Arthas felt seen regardless. Illidan sniffed and growled.
You reek of death, human. You'll regret approaching me.
Arthas grinned. He was itching for a good one-on-one fight.
Come then, he invited. You'll find that we're evenly matched.
Invincible reared and galloped down the hill, as eager for action as his master was. Illidan growled and ran to meet him. It was almost like a dance, Arthas mused, as the two warriors faced each other. Illidan was strong and graceful, his skills demonically enhanced. But Arthas, too, was no mere soldier, nor was Frostmourne an ordinary blade. The fight was fierce and swift. Arthas had been right. They were indeed evenly matched. After too short a time, both combatants fell back, breathing heavily.
"We could go on fighting like this forever," Illidan said. "What is it you truly want?"
Arthas lowered Frostmourne. "From your muttering earlier, I hear that you and your allies are beset by the undead. The dreadlord who commands this undead army is called Tychondrius. He controls a powerful warlock artifact called the Skull of Gul'dan. It is responsible for corrupting these forests."
Illidan cocked his head. "And you wish for me to steal it? Why?"
Arthas's white brows lifted. This one was indeed quick. He deserved a semi-truthful answer, Arthas decided. "Let's just say that I have no love for Tychondrius, and the lord I serve would benefit from the Legion's downfall."
"Why should I believe anything you say, little human?"
Arthas shrugged. "A fair question. Let me answer. My master sees all, Demon Hunter. He knows that you've sought power your whole life. Now it lies within your grasp." His gauntleted hand clenched into a fist in front of Illidan's blindfolded face. And, as he expected, the Night Elf's head turned toward the gesture.
"Seize it, and your enemies will be undone."
Illidan lifted his head slowly and turned his face to Arthas. He was unsettling, this blind man who could so obviously see. The elf stepped back, nodding thoughtfully. Without another word, Arthas turned Invincible's head around and galloped off. Kel'Thuzad would summon him back shortly. All had gone according to the Lich King's plan. He only hoped that Illidan had been as fully obedient as he had seemed. If not, there could be complications. She was nothing of the living, nor did she have the power to resist the commands of the one who had brought her screaming into this new existence. But Sylvanas Windrunner had will. Somehow, Arthas had not broken that. He had done so with others. Why was she, seemingly, the only one who had not caved utterly to him? Was it her own strength, or was it because he enjoyed tormenting her? The banshee that she was now would likely never know. But if her will was her own because Arthas found it amusing, she would have the last laugh. So she had vowed to herself, and Sylvanas always kept her promises. Time had passed in the world of the living since Arthas Menethil and the Scourge had swept through her beloved homeland, and much had occurred. Her so-called master had objected to being used as a pawn. Together with that arrogant, floating sack of bones, Kel'Thuzad, the one responsible for corrupting the glorious Sunwell, Arthas had conspired against both the Dreadlord Tychondrius and the Demon Lord Archimonde, whom Kel'Thuzad himself had helped usher into Azeroth. Sylvanas had paid keen attention. Anything Arthas had to reveal about the way he thought and the way he battled was useful to her. He had not attempted to slay Tychondrius himself, as he had Mal'Ganis. Oh no, the wily once-human prince had tricked another into doing his dirty work for him. Illidan, the luckless being, had been named. Arthas had been able to smell Illidan's hunger for power and used that against him, goading him into stealing the Skull of Gul'dan, a legendary orcish warlock. To do so, Illidan would have to kill Tychondrius. Arthas would be rid of the Demon Lord, and Illidan would be rewarded with an artifact to sate his lust for power. Presumably, all had gone according to plan. Arthas, and therefore Sylvanas, had heard nothing of Illidan since. As for Archimonde, so mighty that he had been able to destroy Dalaran, that great mage city, with a single spell. He had fallen to the power of the life he had come here to consume. Sylvanas now hated the living, with the same passion the Legion had had, and thus it was with mixed feelings that she learned of his fall. The Night Elves had sacrificed their immortality to defeat him. The pure, focused power of nature had destroyed the demon from inside, and then the World Tree had surrendered its vast power in a cataclysm that sent out a massive shockwave. And when Archimon had fallen, his skeleton all that was left, so too had the Legion's attempt to gain a foothold in this world been defeated. Sylvanas returned her attention from her reverie to the present, as the name of the late, unlamented demon lord caught her ear. "It's been months since we last heard from Lord Archimon," their leader, Detharok, said. He stamped his hoof impatiently. "I grow tired of watching over these rotting undead. What are we still doing here?" They were in what had once been the gardens of the palace, where Arthas had strode so long and so short a time ago to murder his own father and unleash doom on his own people. The gardens, too, were rotting, as well as their populace. "We were charged with overseeing this land, Detharok," chided the one named Balnazar. "It is our duty to remain here and ensure that the Scourge is ready for action." "True," rumbled the third, Varimothras, "although we should have received some kind of orders by now." Sylvanas could hardly believe what she had just heard. She turned to Kel'Thuzad. She despised him as much as she despised the Death Knight he appeared to serve so willingly, but she hid her dislike well. "The Legion was defeated months ago," she said quietly. "How could they not know?" "Impossible to say," the Lich replied. "But the longer they remain in command, the more they run the Scourge into the ground. If something is not..." He was interrupted by a sound Sylvanas had never expected to hear in this place, the distinctive sound of a gate being battered and broken. Both undead turned at the noise, and the demons growled angrily, instantly alert, black-webbed wings flexing. Sylvanas's glowing, spectral eyes widened slightly as none other than Arthas himself emerged through the gate. His familiar undead steed all but pranced beneath him. He wore no helm, letting his white hair fall freely about his pale face, and he wore that self-satisfied smirk that Sylvanas so despised. Her insubstantial hands attempted to clench into fists, but such was his control over her that all her fingers could manage was a brief twitch. Arthas's voice was resonant and cheerful. "Greetings, dread lords," he said. They stared at him, visibly bridling at his insolence. "I should thank you for looking after my kingdom during my absence. However, I won't be requiring your services any longer." For a second, they simply gaped at him. Finally, Balnazar recovered enough to retort, "This land is ours. The Scourge belongs to the Legion." "Ah," thought Sylvanas, "here it comes." Arthas's smirk widened. His voice was positively gleeful. "Not anymore, demon. Your masters have been defeated. The Legion is undone. Your deaths will complete the circle." Still grinning, he lifted Frostmourne. The runes along its blade danced and glowed. He tightened the reins, and the skeletal horse bore down on the cluster of three demons. "This isn't over, human," Detharok cried defiantly. The dreadlords were faster than Arthas's skeletal horse. Frostmourne sang only of frustration as it sliced through empty air. The demons had created a portal and vanished to safety. Arthas scowled, but his good humor returned quickly. Sylvanas realized it was because he had them on the run, and their deaths would likely be only a matter of time. He looked up and caught Sylvanas's eye, beckoning her to him. She was forced to obey. Kel'Thuzad needed no coercion, floating happily to his master's side like an obedient cur. "We knew you would return to us, Prince Arthas," the Lich enthused. Arthas barely spared his loyal servant a glance. His gaze was fixed on Sylvanas.
My heart is moved, he said sarcastically. Did you too know I would return, little banshee?
I did, Sylvanas said coldly. It was true. He had to, or else she would never have her chance for revenge. He twitched a finger, demanding more from her, and she gasped as pain shuddered through her.
Prince Arthas, she added. Ah, but you will now address me as king. This is, after all, my land. I was born to rule, and I shall. Once the—
He broke off, inhaling sharply. His eyes widened, and then his face contorted in pain. He hunched over the bony neck of his horse, his gauntleted hands clenching hard on the reins. A sharp cry of agony was wrenched from him. Sylvanas watched, experiencing the most pleasure she had known since that dreadful day when Quel'Thalas had fallen. She drank in his pain like nectar. She had no idea why he was suffering so, but she savored every second of it. Grunting, he lifted his head. His eyes stared at something she couldn't see, and he extended an imploring hand toward it.
The pain is unbearable, Arthas growled through gritted teeth. What is happening to me?
He appeared to listen, as if an unheard voice was replying.
King Arthas, Kel'Thuzad cried, do you need assistance?
Arthas didn't reply at once. He gasped for breath, then slowly sat up, visibly composing himself.
No, the pain has passed, but my powers are diminished.
His voice was full of puzzlement. Had Sylvanas still possessed a beating heart, it would have leaped at the words.
Something is terribly wrong here.
The pain took him again. His body spasmed, his head falling back as his mouth opened in a soundless cry of pain, the veins on his neck standing out like cords. Kel'Thuzad fluttered around his adored master like a fussy nursemaid. Sylvanas simply watched coldly until the spasm had passed. Slowly, carefully, he slid off invincible. His booted feet hit the flagstones, slipped out from under him, and he fell hard. The lich reached out a skeletal hand to help the prince, no, self-styled king, to his feet.
My old quarters, gasped Arthas. I need rest. And then I have a long journey to prepare for.
Sylvanas watched him go, staggering weakly in the direction of the rooms he had grown up in. She let her lips curve into a smile. And the spectral fingers on her hands twitched for a moment, then curled up into angry fists. It was oddly peaceful in Silverpine. Soft mists swirled gently near the moist, pine-needle-covered earth. Sylvanas knew that if she had possessed physical feet, she would have felt it soft and springy beneath them, would have inhaled a rich, evergreen scent from the moist air. But she felt nothing, smelled nothing. She floated, insubstantial, toward the meeting site. And such was her eagerness for the meeting that at this moment she did not regret her lack of senses. Arthas had enjoyed turning beautiful, proud, strong-willed Quel'Dorai women into banshees after his success with her. He had given them to she who had been their ranger general in life, to control and command, tossing her a bone like she was a faithful hound. He would shortly see how faithful a pet she was. After overhearing the Dreadlord's conversation earlier, she had sent one of her banshees after them to speak with them and gather information. The demons had accepted her emissary with pleasure and had asked for her mistress to join them tonight to discuss something of mutual benefit regarding the Banshee Queen's current status. In the depths of the forest, she could see a faint green glow and floated toward it. Sure enough, they awaited her as they had said they would. Three great demons turning to her, their wings flapping and betraying their agitation. Balnazar spoke first. Lady Sylvanas, we are pleased that you came.
How could I not? She responded. For some reason I no longer hear the Lich King's voice in my head. My will is my own once again.
It was indeed, and it was purely by that will that she kept the elation from her voice. She did not wish them to know more than she chose. You dreadlords seem to know why. They exchanged glances, their faces curving into smiles.
We've discovered that the Lich King is losing his power, Verimathus said, hellish glee in his voice. As it wanes, so too does his ability to command undead such as you.
That was good news indeed, if it were actually true. But it was not specific enough for Sylvanas.
And what of King Arthas? She pressed, unable to keep a sneer out of her voice as she used the Death Knight's title. What about his powers?
Balnazar waved a black-clawed hand dismissively.
He will cease to annoy us, like a summer fly whose time has come and gone. Though his runeblade Frostmourne carries powerful enchantments, Arthas's own powers will fade in time. It is inevitable.
Sylvanas was not so certain. She, too, had once underestimated Arthas, and along with the cold hatred in her heart, she also bore guilt for her part in his blood-soaked victory.
You seek to overthrow him, and want my help to do it, she said bluntly.
Deatharok, the one who appeared to be in charge, had stood quietly by while his brothers spoke to Sylvanas. They had been angry and impassioned, but his expression had remained neutral. Now, at last, he spoke, in cold tones of utter loathing.
The Legion may be defeated, but we are the Nathrezin. We'll not let some upstart human get the best of us.
He paused, looking at them each in turn.
Arthas must fall.
The glowing green gaze settled upon Sylvanas.
As you have been watching us, little ghost, so have we been observing as well. It is obvious that the Lich, Kel'Thuzad, is far too loyal to betray his master. There appears to be affection between the two.
His gray lips curved in a dangerous smile.
But you, on the other hand, hate him.
She did not think she could hide that truth, even if she wanted to, so fiercely did it burn inside her.
We are united in that much, Dreadlord. I have my own reasons for seeking vengeance. Arthas murdered my people and turned me into this monstrosity.
She paused for a moment, the loathing of both Arthas and what he had done to her. So intense, it took away her ability to speak. They waited, patiently, smugly. They thought they could use her. They would be wrong.
I may take part in your bloody coup, but I will do so in my own way.
She wanted them as allies, but they needed to know that she would be no toy.
I will not exchange one master for another. If you wish my aid, then you must accept that.
Deatharok smiled.
We will slay the Death Knight together, then.
Sylvanas nodded, and a slow smile crept across her ghostly face.
Your days have numbers, King Arthas Menethil. And I am the Hourglass.
Chapter 22 Arthas rubbed his temple, going over and over the visions he had seen. Always before, communication from the Lich King had come only from Frostmourne. But the instant the crippling pain had struck him, Arthas had actually seen the being he served for the first time. The Lich King was alone, in the middle of a vast cavern, as imprisoned in the unnatural ice as Frostmourne had been. But this had been no sleek covering of his form.